Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Hugh Weber is an SDPB contributor. He's been all over town today and racing back and forth. He's also the host of the Potluck Society. That's a podcast, and you can find it at listen.sdpb.org. You can download it and have it play right to your phone like I do in the car on my daily commute, and then take and listen to that. Find it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts these days. Hugh, welcome back.
It's
in the moment.
Great to be here. It's always great to be here.
Andy Boyle, do you know him?
I don't, but I like him already.
He's funny. You're going to like that book. It's a hoot. And best advice and worst advice you've ever gotten. Use the bathroom whenever you get the chance, which is pretty good advice when you do live radio, too.
I had a much older, wiser guy when I was active in politics, and it was while I was serving the president in U.S. Department of Agriculture. And after the first week of meetings, he pulled me aside and he just said, Weber, you're a smart guy, but you talk too much. He said, ask more questions and keep your mouth shut. And nice. I thought, that's pretty good advice.
I remember Sheryl Sandberg's advice in Lean In, and it was always sit at the table when you're invited. And it was, she would go into a conference room and she would see, a woman coworker who was sitting off to the side in those back chairs. And she would say, come to the table. And they were like, no, I'm fine over here. And she took her aside afterwards and she said, if I invite you to the table, you come sit at the table because I want you there. I thought that's pretty good advice.
That's great advice and a pretty good invite. If Sheryl Sandberg asked me to sit at the table, I'd be a little sheepish, but still do it, I think.
Show up if she says yes. Worst advice.
Gosh, there's an abundance of worse advice, mostly involving dating and relationships, and came from teenage boys. So
I remember my first job out of college was just a bad fit for me. And so many people said, you got to stick it out for a year. You got to stay a year. And, I was unhappy for a year. And I think I should have, gotten some better advice and taken it in a different direction sooner. It's okay to say this isn't good. Let's figure out how it works better for everyone.
Yeah, I think a lot of the bad advice I've gotten has probably been about showing grit and sticking things out. And I think it overlooks the fact that life is extremely short. And why should you stick into miserable situations when it's not the right fit and you know that?
A time for persistence and a time to allow yourself to move on.
That's right.
All right, Potluck Society, what's the current episode out there? Is pretty good. Let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about this Oda documentary afterwards.
Yeah, so the current episode is someone that we met here a number of weeks ago, Stephen Shaparo, and it is just a great episode. He walks through this idea of space, and I talk about how I find the space of this region to be both intimidating and empowering, and then I mirror that with his discussion around physical spaces and built environment. And how he talks about we build buildings, but then they build us, or we shape buildings and then they shape us. But he gets to the end of this conversation on this week's episode, and it's clear that he could care less about the built environment. For him, it's all about helping facilitate people and create culture and shape stories through design spaces. And it's kind of a wonderful breakthrough to wrap the episode up with.
Conversations about design are often unexpected. For me, what will come out of those conversations? All right, Oda documentary. That's what we're going to talk about today. Big art of the Oda region. Where do you want to begin?
So just the context, and I know we've talked about it a little bit with the filmmakers, Kylie Leonetti and Christian Jensen, both from Minneapolis, spent a week on the road traveling the three states that end in OTA, so South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota. And one of the things that kind of popped up unexpectedly as we drove around is the absolute abundance of giant art, right? So if you're heading west out of Sioux Falls, you drive by the Montrose area where there's an incredible series of installations there. If you're up heading west out of Fargo, you go by the Jamestown, the world's largest buffalo. And if you get way west, in either of these states, you find yourself with Crazy Horse and Rushmore down here in South Dakota, and you find the Enchanted Highway. It just sounds great, the Enchanted Highway in western North Dakota. So we're going to hear two of my favorite clips. These are pulled directly from the film. These are times on that drive, that incredibly long drive in the middle of the January winter this year, where we stopped to visit some of the region's giant art pieces in Jamestown and then Regent, North Dakota. It's a long drive from Milbank to Bismarck, North Dakota. But we broke it up with one of my favorite stops in Jamestown, home of the world's largest buffalo, Dakota Thunder.
ridiculous, but it's this kind of thing that is exactly what it is about this region that I think I find most compelling, is that what on God's earth would compel a human being to like just look where we are. It's not like they carved a ridge out here. Like, we are literally on a cliff. And he's like, let's put a buffalo on it. I think this represents a repressed farmer. Like, this is a farmer who like had some secondary layer where he just wanted to build epic things. I am 100% confident when this was built by, you know, some man or some woman, that they felt like this will draw people to Jamestown. Look at that. It's the Chamber of Commerce in the city. A city council wrote a check to Elmer Paul Peterson in the 50s to build the world's largest buffalo. You know, which is no different than Milbank writing a check to bring Jason Roberts to talk about building better blocks and refurbing ice rinks. Like, it's all that same balance of this need to create and be creative despite circumstances, but also on some level for the betterment of community, which I think is a pretty magical parallel. It makes a ton of sense when you see these sculptures and the public art and engagement art and creativity in metro areas, even in mid-sized towns, even in places like Jamestown with the giant buffalo. But we are 20 minutes south of the interstate. We are headed towards Regents, which is somewhere out there, a super small town, and a guy came up with this idea for the Enchanted Highway, which you may not recognize it from its outward appearance, but we're on the Enchanted Highway. These sculptures are about every 5 miles apart, and they are extraordinary. It looks like this one's called Fisherman's Dream, and you see we're just down the road. We were at Grasshoppers in the Field, and before that, the Flying Geese. And you've got this sense that, A, there's something really genuinely important about it as a folk art piece, but it's also community development and economic development. It's also this love letter to his town that he would build these things over a period of years, and he would commit so deeply to concept that he would take a stretch of 25 miles of highway and make it an art gallery. That's the kind of, courage seems like the wrong word, but that's the kind of courage that I can celebrate. I can stand out in the middle of a North Dakota winter and appreciate not only the art for its own sake, but for what it says about this guy and this region and this community. And then I can get back into the car and get the feeling back in my ears and hands.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to In the Moment. We've got Hugh Weber here with the Potluck Society and Oda in the studio. And you heard an excerpt from the Oda documentary, standing out in North Dakota, freezing your ears off and looking at giant buffalo, folk art, community development, love, all that converging with cold.
The visual there was we had been driving. It's a long drive from Bismarck to Rapid City, and you kind of drive off the end of the earth, and then you head south. And so I was ready for a long drive and was wearing just a thin windbreaker, and our director just said, hey, we need to film this. Get out. And I was like, I don't know where my coat is. And he's like, get out. And so I'm literally standing in a windbreaker as the ice storm is happening around me. We couldn't stand on the highway because you just kind of slide with the wind because it was so ice covered. But it was this amazing thing. I don't think I had fully appreciated how much art exists kind of on the wide open prairie here. Yeah. And we think of it in terms, and I don't even know that we think of Rushmore or Crazy Horse in terms of art anymore. But they are, like, they were carved over a period of time, Rushmore for 14 years, and people watch these things in process. And, you know, you go to the Enchanted Highway, which I believe he was a school teacher or is a school teacher and has spent his summers for a decade. These are massive pieces of art. This is the Geese in Flight, I think, is the largest freestanding scrap iron art installation on the planet. Like, these are massive, and it just, there's something so inspiring about it.
Mm. And then you go downtown Sioux Falls and see brand new sculptures up for the annual Sculpture Walk Turnover. Public art it's hard to put into perspective what that really means for people. We get excited in Sioux Falls about at the turning of the sculptures.
That's right. I think what part of it is that we as human beings love to be surprised and delighted, and those unexpected moments of art and those new pieces of art is that just glee and wonder that comes with surprise and delight. You know, we did the walk and did the drive because we wanted to check them out. And then we heard we missed the buffalo down on the south end of Phillips. And so we made another drive back out. It's beautiful. We were extremely excited that the pork chopper on 8th Street was still there. It's the pig flying
this?
The helicopter.
Right.
We were glad that stuck around because that is one of the Weber family favorites.
I like the interactive. Anything that we can sort of play music with, and I don't know the names of those sculptures, but the ones that really invite you to be part of the experience, those ones really stand out for me.
That's right. That's right. They're beautiful. And I think they look different all over the region. You know, we make a brief, put a brief spotlight on Darwin, Minnesota, which has the largest ball of twine.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think an exercise in creativity, slightly different, but with this weird intersection of commerce and economic development and art. We visit later in the film, Altman Studeni, one of my favorite artists. He's from Plankinton. He's featured and shares his perspective on these same types of art installations. Now he's got a bit of a different view, which kind of comes up as he's explaining the Plankinton Grain Palace.
Tell me about the Grain Palace and tell me about...
Yeah, the first Grain Palace in the country was in Sioux City. And I think that was like 1880-something, late 80s. The Sioux City Grain Palace ran for a few years and had a model where it kept getting bigger every year. Like the first year was a city block, and then by the end of it, it was big enough to have a trolley line that ran through the middle of it. Plankinton, in 1891, a group of business people decided that they wanted to follow the model of Sioux City and introduce a Grain Palace to Plankinton as well. It ran from 1891 to 1892, and then the second year it went bankrupt. But Plankinton wasn't the only one, obviously. You know, Mitchell's took hold the year after Plankinton's closed. There were grain palaces in Gregory, there were grain palaces around Aberdeen. Because there was less structure, there was just more opportunity to try anything out. Like, maybe this thing will work, and maybe this thing will work. So often those things are couched in like an economic development perspective, right? Like Enchanted Highway exists because the creator of the Enchanted Highway wants to draw people to his town. But I think that there's something else that's motivating it, right? It's still the same motivating factor that like would motivate an artist to make the thing that they're making, that they just want to see this object made real, see something existing where there wasn't a thing before, or the process of converting materials into something else, right? Like Wayne Porter, who has the Porter Sculpture Park outside Montrose, he's just fascinated with metal. And like to take a little tour with him around that park, I mean, he's talking about all of the pieces that went into making those objects, right? The bull's head is made from the steel tiles that join railroad ties. That attitude towards making and the attitude towards wanting these things to be real, I think, is maybe within everybody. And the excuse to do it is put in these like economic development terms.
There can be something so clear for two people who know each other well that are different perspectives on this issue. But my mind was blown to a certain degree by this conversation, yeah. Right? That we all have this innate desire to create, A, and B, that the Mitchell Corn Palace is a bit of a poser, that both Plankinton and Sioux City predated it. No, I'm kidding. But I think there's something wonderful about it. I never would have considered the Corn Palace to be a similar exercise to the sculpture walk of Sioux Falls. But I think in the way that Altman frames it, it really is, and it's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, this desire to make something out of nothing and see whatever lived in your head be realized. And we've talked about this before with whether or not people really see themselves as artists or whether we're all just human beings who like to make stuff.
That's right.
As well. And when do you declare yourself an artist, or when do you just declare art as part of what you do, as an everyday activity?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Whether you're organizing a carnival for kids or putting up a bull's head near Montrose, I think it's part of, you know, my friend Amos Colbo, who you've interviewed before, mm-hmm. says that people just want to be known and loved. And I think that part of that exercise of creating is to put that mark out in the world that says, here I am. You know, I hope you love me, but at least you'll know me. And I think that there's something wonderful about that.
And here I was.
When
you're not here anymore, whether you've moved on down the enchanted highway, physically or metaphorically, tell me.
Which I wouldn't recommend in January. Right. Any other time, I'm sure it's lovely.
I've got about a minute or two left, Hugh. Tell me about the documentary and how people are going to be able to watch it and really experience it together in community.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to do the first screening, first major screening here in Sioux Falls on June 9th. Then we're going to go that same weekend that we're waiting to set the date, but I believe it'll be the 10th in Minneapolis. The following weekend we'll be in Rapid City, and then we're going to just kind of bounce around the region. We have requests from Vermilion and Webster, and we're going to go back to Milbank. We had some technical issues last week, but we're going to take it wherever they'll let us project it on the side of a barn or the inside of a gymnasium and just share it. Because I think that our hope is that the film itself stands alone, but then the questions we ask about what do we see, what resonated with us, how did it make us feel, and what does it mean for our community? Man, that's a conversation that I look forward to having.
All right. We look forward to having you back, and we'll talk more about what that journey of just bringing the documentary around means to you as well, Hugh. I know that's pretty significant time.
It is.
Hugh Weber, host of the Potluck Society SDPB contributor. You can find that listen.sdpb.org, wherever you find your podcasts, iTunes, etc.